Happy Sabbath, everyone. It's good to be here. Our numbers are a little light today. I think we have summer camp going. I'm sure those kids are going to love it this year. Get my timer going. Welcome to all the visitors, if we have any. I can't always see out there in the audience with these lights so bright. I'll have to shoot out of here after services. My mom's not feeling very well, so I've got to go. Got to go check on her. But I wanted to say a prayer for her. So today I'm going to talk about a biblical topic. Hopefully, I always do. But I'm going to start. I'm going to start with a story. Hopefully, it's a relevant story. Who all lived here 10 years ago? 2014. Does anyone remember Snowpocalypse?
Yes.
Yes? We have a small group today, so you can talk back to me if you want to. It's fine. Makes me feel like you're listening. So, Snowpocalypse. That storm hit back in 2014 in January. And I remember it very well because I was it was an interesting day for me. It hit around 12 o'clock p.m. And then my lovely wife, I'd just been married for about a year. With all of her wisdom, she said, you know, you probably shouldn't go to Duluth. Duluth is north of here, about an hour. And I said, well, Atlanta never snows much, so I'm not worried about it. She goes, well, you might want to wear a jacket, at least a jacket. I said, no, I'm good. You know, I grew up in Texas watching my dad shovel snow in a t-shirt, so I guess that's where I got that. And she said, well, take your four-wheel drive truck, your Chevy. I said, I'm going to save gas. I'll take your Mazda. It's a stick shift. It's a two-wheel drive. I'll be fine. So I go to my appointment, and everything was fine. When I got out after lunch, everything was different. Okay? The roads were already starting to ice over, and it turned into a gridlock. It probably took me, I don't know, I don't remember exactly how long, 6-7 hours to work my way just down to the Buckhead area. And by that time, all the gas stations were running out of gas, and it wouldn't have mattered anyway because the roads were gridlocked. If you remember, this is what the roads looked like within an hour. So that's where things get fun, okay? Because if you remember, I told you I was wearing a t-shirt. And at this point, it's about 20 degrees outside. It's dark. And I wouldn't say I was desperate, but I was going to be cold. So I started looking through the back of the Mazda, my wife's car, rummaging around and for something, anything I could put on. And lo and behold, I found one of her dresses that was going to be picked up for dry cleaning. So raise your hand if you think I put the dress on. Raise your hand if you think I refused to put the dress on. Okay, it's about an even split. I refused to put the dress on. I did wrap it around my neck like a scarf. But I was not going to be caught dead in public or private wearing a woman's dress, especially with today's cultural shift. So I got out of the vehicle. I started off on foot, shuffling. I say shuffling because you can't really run on ice. So it took me a couple, 2-3 hours, I guess, to shuffle my way home. And I've been out in the weather before without jackets and tents and sleeping bags on 3 occasions. I've learned you have to keep your heart rate up around 140 to 160 to keep that heat going in your body, or you will get hypothermia because it was in the 20s. It got down to 12 degrees at the coldest. So it was very entertaining. Very exciting. By the time I got to my house, I live up Paces Ferry, about 2 miles from 75 up a long hill. And none of the cars could get past my house. There were hundreds of cars just sprawled everywhere. And my house was at the top of the hill, so no one could get past our house. It was too steep, too much ice. When I got there, my wife was serving coffee and food and, you know, bringing people in the house. These are total strangers, right? And I had told her, like, you know, you can't just let any dangerous looking fellas in the house. So she was Luckily, she let me in as well. If she had not let me in, I definitely would have gotten hypothermia. There's not a doubt about it. I mean, by this point, I was cold. So I spent the rest of the night, I jumped in my Chevy at this point, finally, and I drove up to Home Depot. They gave me a pallet of sand and tow ropes, and I shuttled people up to Home Depot because they opened their doors and they allowed people to sleep there that night. People really need a shelter. There were two babies born on 285 that night by the same police officer. It was really a life-saving opportunity. So I drove around all night, you know, till the sun came up, trying to get people unstuck and shuttle them to Home Depot or put them up in our house for the night. And for a moment, it felt like something out of the ancient world when hospitality wasn't just about dinner parties. It was a life-saving duty. Let me set another timer here. Is there another one up here? Because I'm using this for the slideshow. I'll start another one here. It felt like something out of ancient times, right? Because in ancient times, that's what biblical hospitality was. It was oftentimes a life-saving opportunity for traveling strangers. Families, animals, traveling from one region to the next. They needed lodging, they needed water, they needed food, they needed shelter, they needed basic things. But today, biblical hospitality can feel rare, especially towards strangers, because hosting strangers can be a little dangerous, you know? The general public has gone a little crazy. People are on all kinds of medications, and legal and illegal. Some are criminals, some are not. So you're going to get a mixed bag if you start hosting complete and total strangers off the street. But people off the street aren't the only types of strangers. We have a new couple here were strangers to me just a couple months ago. No, they are not. We always get traveling visitors that are strangers to me, and I'm a stranger to them. After a few conversations or a dinner, we're no longer strangers. And that's the beauty of conversing with strangers or inviting them into your home. You can get to know one another. So when I use the term hospitality today, what comes to mind? Because the meaning of words can change over time, and sometimes we use just one English word to translate, you know, two Greek words. Well, the English word hospitality first popped up in the 14th century. And what it means today is, you can look up the Cambridge Dictionary says, number one, the act of being friendly and welcoming to guests and visitors. And number two, the work or business of providing food and drink and entertainment and hotels to customers, not just to strangers, but to customers. So we've covered the modern definition, but what about the biblical definition? Well, in the Old Testament, the Hebrew word for hospitality is haknasat or kim, which literally translates to bringing in guests or taking in of strangers. And we won't go through all the scriptures, but there are quite a few scriptures about how to treat strangers and travelers in the land with respect and dignity and caring for them and their physical needs, their physical capacity, food, shelter, lodging, those types of things. The New Testament word philonekesia or philozenos is the word from which we translate hospitality. And it literally is two words, philos or philos meaning friend, and xenos meaning stranger, which is, again, rendered basically a love for strangers, showing hospitality to strangers. That was the focus in biblical times. Even though today we think of it as hotels, restaurants, or having a dinner party. In ancient times, the actual word, biblical word, meant more love for a stranger. So, in the Old Testament, the physical needs were obviously incredibly necessary for obvious reasons. And it was in the New Testament as well, because it was still ancient times. But in the New Testament, there appeared to be a shift where it applied to the church and the brethren as well. There was an increased level of traveling. You had the disciples traveling to and from. They would travel even without excessive food or supplies and depend on each congregation to put them up. I don't think you're going to get Dr. Ost, calling you up to start staying in everyone's homes for weeks on end. But in ancient times, that's what they would have had to do or have done. So again, I want to compare and contrast Old Testament versus New Testament versus today. Old Testament hospitality was rooted in survival and covenantal law. There's a lot of scriptures that point towards that. It was offered to strangers, again, travelers, and the vulnerable. You sheltered them from the elements, the cold, the heat, the rain, the snow. Not just that, but dangers like robbers and thugs. Well, I won't go through the story, but you know the story. I think it's in Judges 19 of the Levite that was traveling with his concubine looking for a place to stay. And he was told, don't stay in the city square. It's not safe. And it turned out to be very unsafe. And there were some very abominable things that occurred that night. So even in an Israelitish city, or that happened to be a Benjamite, there were a lot of bad dudes running around that you would need safety from. And once someone crossed over your threshold into your home, you were responsible for protecting them. Today, that would be called like castle law. But there would be examples in Genesis 18 with Abraham, Lot, Genesis 19, Job 31, 32, 2 Kings. So let's move to New Testament. New Testament hospitality seems to have been more rooted in spiritual love and moving almost beyond just the physical needs, but the spiritual connections that you would make, and offered to not only strangers, but to brethren alike. It was the expression of Christian identity. It was intentional, and it was proactive. There would be examples like Lydia opening her home in Acts 16, believers breaking bread in Acts 2, the Good Samaritan. The parable of the Good Samaritan is a good read. I've probably read it 100 times to my children. You have those that wanted to pass on by without offering hospitality, and you had one that would pay for his lodging, his food, his meals. Romans 12, verse 13 shows both sides. It reads, sharing in the needs of the saints, which is sort of internal, and pursuing hospitality, which is historically an external focus. Today we apply it to the internal church as well. But you can practice hospitality with, again, guests, visitors, strangers, and brethren. So the modern secular shift, today the world hospitality has been relegated largely to the hotel industry, or even in private homes it's thought of more of like entertaining, fancy dinner parties. But that in itself is not that is a limited scope of hospitality. When you invite someone for a dinner, there's nothing wrong with inviting your friends, but once in a while you need to try to invite guests you have not met. They could be strangers from church. They could be in the community. I'm obviously going to throw a disclaimer in there for being careful with inviting people off the street. As a sidebar, 20, 30 years ago, I got approached by homeless people all the time because I was always out and about working, driving trucks and trailers, and always asked for money. And I wouldn't give them money, but I would pass out business cards all the time. Here's a business card. If you want money, jump in the truck. I'll take you to a job site. You can mix mortar. You can dig ditches. You can plant plants. So we have skilled labor and unskilled labor. And no one really ever took me up on it. Sometimes I'd give them food, but in terms of a real job, it just didn't ever really work out. And I've tried in times past helping various homeless people with tents, backpacks, clothing, and you check back up on them a few days later, and it's gone. Usually they sell it or it gets stolen. At the end of the day, they have a lot of mental health problems and addictions, and really they just need Christ to return and to heal them physically and spiritually. So there's very little we can do in those cases. Homeless people, I think, 2,000 years ago were not quite the same variety that they are today. They didn't have access to all the legal and illegal types of drugs that sadly degrade the mind and the body. So if you were helping someone that was homeless or traveling, you were probably safer 2,000 or 3,000 years ago in doing so. You know, in modern times, we no longer need to protect strangers from bandits, you know, or deserts without water where you might walk for 30 miles without a drop of water. But we're surrounded by a world of people who are spiritually exhausted, emotionally wounded, and isolated in many cases. Again, we're more connected than ever through social media, but the more time we spend on our phones and our tablets and our computers in our homes, the less time we're spending face-to-face together. And face-to-face over dinner parties or walks or shared activities, that's where we tend to bond as a congregation. Today, the Holy Spirit offers shelter from things like loneliness, shame, doubt, sin, rejection. And we, as the body of Christ, the Ecclesia, we play a role in hosting these people, whether they be brethren or strangers. Hebrews 13:2 reads, "Do not forget to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing so, some have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it." We know Abraham ran to meet two travelers to give them food and water, and they turned out to be angels. I do think I have had experience with two angels 25 years ago. That's a story for another day. But I want to read 3 John 1:5-8. This is an example of showing hospitality to travelers. "It commends those who support traveling teachers." And that was more common in our former organization in the 80s and 90s. Some of the teachers or pastors or elders would travel. Not just them, anyone. You could go anywhere to any congregation and have a home to stay in. And that was my experience. We lived in Texas off of Interstate 40 in Amarillo. And Interstate 40, it runs east and west. So we were able to host a lot of visitors, a lot of travelers. So I, as a kid, I got to grow up seeing my mom and my dad host all types of, mostly brethren from various congregations. I think today people are more inclined to get a hotel, but historically it was more common to stay with members. So I've sort of keep going back and forth between strangers and brethren. If you read Galatians 6:10, we do want to be friendly to strangers. And again, even a new member can be a stranger to me the first time I meet them. And a week later, they're no longer a stranger. But Galatians 6:10, "So then as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, and especially to those who are of the household of faith," which means the brethren. So there is nothing wrong with focusing on doing good to the brethren first and foremost before the rest. So my purpose today is to encourage us all to open our homes and our hearts in love, not out of like obligation, but knowing biblical hospitality fulfills God's will, number one, it builds bonds, it heals hearts, and it reflects the coming kingdom of God. So my first point is that hospitality is not a suggestion, but a biblical expectation and a spiritual blessing to both the host and the guest. I went back and forth with this one on my wife. I originally said it's a command. And she was like, "It is not a command. It's not in the commandments, but it's not listed as a Ten Commandment." But if you read through all the scriptures, there's a few dozen scriptures about it. By the end, you're like, man, this is not a suggestion. This is strongly encouraged and almost commanded. It's like an order. Romans 12, I think I might have already read this, but I'm going to read it again. Romans 12:13, "Share with the Lord's people who are in need and practice hospitality." It's two sides of the same coin. So you share with the Lord's people, with the brethren, and you practice hospitality as well to them, but also to perhaps traveling strangers. If you read the different translations, they put a different focus on one or the other, but in summation, without boring you with all the details, you can practice hospitality with both brethren and strangers, even though philoxenia means love for a stranger. Because in the New Testament, the focus started to increase towards the brethren as well. 1 Peter 4:9. 1 Peter 4, verse 9, offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. Without grumbling. Why would it say that? You know? Well, in today's time, if you want to have a dinner party and or a dinner for anyone, you can order takeout, you can go to Costco, you can cook frozen food, hot dogs, hamburgers. Everything's readily available. 2,000-3,000 years ago, I don't think supplies and materials were just as readily available. When you were sharing with someone, especially if it's a stranger, you were sharing limited resources. So there could be grumbling. It takes time. It takes money. It takes effort, not only to prepare, but to clean up afterwards. Now, in both Old and New Testaments, opening your home is considered essential for righteous living, especially for elders. It was a requirement. 1 Timothy 3, verse 2, reads, a church overseer must be hospitable, among other traits. Titus 1, 8, an elder must be hospitable, self-controlled, and upright. Now, I was picking on Dr. Holliday up in Buford, because I gave this message a few weeks ago. And I said, you know, he lives 2 hours away. There's a great distance. It's really not convenient. I've never been to his house, actually. But every time I go visit to speak or to lead songs, Dr. Steve Holliday is a host. He takes ownership of that congregation. And when I walk in the door, he greets me. And, hey, song man, it's good to see you. And he stand there and talk to me for 15 minutes. He makes me feel welcome. He's hospitable. He's taking ownership of that space. Today when I walked in, we had a lady and a man, because it's not gender specific, greeting me at the front door. They were taking ownership of this physical space, this congregation, and greeting all the brethren and the visitors. That's actually a great feeling, right? Some people live alone, for example, and they might not have any. You might have been, or you may have been the first person to greet them all day long, or all week long. So it is a trait of hospitality that you can perform at church here, and you don't have to be a door greeter. You can just go up to anyone new. You can greet them. Make sure they feel welcome and make sure they feel love. 1 Timothy 5:10, even widows to be eligible for support must have shown hospitality. So biblical hospitality, it's a very important concept, even though you might have never heard a sermon on it. I think there's only 12 sermons and sermonettes combined online on our website, even though there's about 30 or 35,000 messages on our website and only roughly 12 are on hospitality. So I thought it would be a good topic. You know, Abraham hosted strangers, again, who turned out to be angels. Lydia hosted Paul. The early church hosted in their homes. I want to say it's important to show hospitality to young people that may be traveling here or they're temporarily here for college. When my wife was, when she left Seattle, she moved to Cal Poly University to run track there. She ran the 800 meter in track. And there wasn't a United Church of God congregation within hours. And so she was living in a dorm with all these athletes, and on a Friday night she was alone. There was no church members there. So she found out there was a David Hume group. So she went to the David Hume congregation. And the first weekend, there are people inviting her for dinner. And so she ended up going to a family named the Sigelskis. They would invite her over on Friday nights, pretty much every Friday night. Eventually, she just moved in with them. At some point, the man of the house is like, do you live here? What are you doing here? Why don't you ever leave, you know? But he had a big, you know, 8,000-square-foot house, so I guess he had room for her with his other kids. He had other kids in college as well. So that hospitality that was extended to her, you know, helped to keep her close to brethren. And sometimes, you know, college kids can be pretty lonely if they're isolated. I didn't have that experience. I went to Auburn. There was like 6 kids in the church at Auburn. So we always had a place to eat dinner on a Friday night and get together. But not all young kids have that. So it's important to extend that opportunity to them. If you look at certain cultures like the Jewish, a lot of Jewish people get together on Friday nights. It's mandatory. Sabbath dinner. It's like a, it just can't be missed. Same in my home. Sabbath dinners are very important. I can miss dinner on a Tuesday. I cannot miss Friday night dinner. So hospitality was never optional. It was foundational to a successful society. And I want to touch on something. There's a sentiment out there I've heard before that, well, hospitality is a certain, it's a gift, right? That people sometimes say it's a gift some people have and some people don't have it. And I've even heard, well, it's a spiritual gift listed in the Bible. But is it? Read the Bible from front to back. Tell me if it is a spiritual gift. I can't find where it is. So, it's just a necessity. It's not like some of us need to be hospitable, some of us don't, okay? I want you to imagine if you were traveling with your family, your wife, your kids, your aunts, your uncles, your cousins, and there's 24 of you, and you're all sharing one mule because you're poor. This is 3,000 years ago. You're in Israel or Egypt, wherever. And you've been walking for 2 weeks. You're running out of supplies. There's no water. You're not near a river. The ocean's just salt water. And there's a snowstorm. It's cold. You're hungry. You're tired. You come up, you crest a hill, and you see this house. There's a house. There's a well. There's barns with other animals. You go knock on the door. You say, we desperately need access to your well. We need water for our one shared donkey and our children and shelter from the cold and the wind. We could stay in the barn or the house, whatever. We'll take anything. Can you imagine the man of the house saying, well, I'd love to, but hospitality is just not my gift. My gift is, you know, preaching, or my gift is long-suffering. If you keep going about another 50 miles, there's another town up the goat trail, and I'm sure you'll find someone there with a gift of hospitality to host you. No, I mean, that would be ridiculous, right? It'd be ridiculous. In that day and time, that could be a death sentence. If you didn't help someone, you know, you can only go like 3 days without water. So hospitality was, it was just mandatory. Philoxenos, or the Greek word, or the Hebrew word. You had to provide it. That was supposed to be funny. Nobody laughed. My second point. Shared meals in a home create deep, sacred connection. And again, shared meals, even at a restaurant, but especially in a home, create a deep, sacred connection between individuals. Today, science confirms what Scripture shows. Sharing a meal can lower stress. It boosts trust hormones like oxytocin, and it builds a sense of belonging or community. So how many people in this room have ever bonded over a meal together? I know I have. I've had many of you over for dinner at my house in times past. And it's nice to go to a restaurant again or have a picnic out on a national park or something, but there's nothing like hosting your own home. Jesus often taught during or after a meal. Luke 7, for example, you know the story of Simon the Pharisee that hosted a dinner, and the sinful woman came and washed his feet with her hair. There was a lot of powerful teaching moments there over a meal. Meals were central to Christ's ministry, not just to fill stomachs, but to feed them spiritually as well. There's a lot of scriptures about the bread of life. My third point is that excuses are normal, but they miss the point. Yes, some of us feel unqualified to, let's say, extend biblical hospitality to a brand new person in church or a traveler, or even maybe someone you know that's a friend. You're not comfortable having small groups or large groups over to your house. Maybe you feel like your place is too small, or not a good cook, or I'm too busy. But hospitality isn't about showing off. It's about showing up and putting in a sacrifice. I could tell you the house I was born in was like $26,000. It was a tiny little house. My parents always hosted. We moved to a slightly bigger house in Texas that kept hosting, 50, 60 people sometimes. It was like a $70,000 house. My third house, the same thing. Like, none of our houses were fancy. None of them were, I don't think people even fit in the homes. We had to spill out into the back patio and the driveway. When I moved to Atlanta, I had an apartment. It wasn't exactly like the most amazing apartment. You walked in and there was a motorcycle in the dining room, whitewater kayaks hanging from the ceiling, there was a rock climbing wall, and weightlifting. So it wasn't exactly like a woman's dream of a place to host. My wife was like, I am not moving into this apartment. We are moving out. But it never stopped me. We always hosted lots of dinners. So just because your home may not feel adequate, it's not something to feel inferior about. Because something spiritual happens when you invite others in and you share a meal. To be welcomed at someone's table is one of the oldest and most meaningful acts of human connection. Proverbs 15, verse 17 reads, "Better a small serving of vegetables with love than a fattened calf with hatred." And I follow that up with, again, if you don't feel like you're up to cooking, have you ever tried Costco's pizzas, the $10 frozen pizzas? You can throw those in the oven. They're good to go. Kids love them. I'm not saying they're good for you, but they taste good. You can do hot dogs. You can do hamburgers. You can ask people to bring their own dish. There's a lot of ways to get together and share a meal. But if you don't feel comfortable, you know, inviting people over just yet, there's in the meantime, there's other ways you can show hospitality. Like I mentioned before, be the first to greet someone at the door with a warm smile. Take initiative in setting up or tearing down the chairs and the tables. That's being a host in the space. Helping in the kitchen, bringing a dish to the potluck, offering to help clean up. Sit with someone who looks alone or new to church. Just take ownership of the space around you. My fourth point is that society is losing biblical hospitality. Society is losing biblical hospitality, but we can practice it in our church culture. In America, hospitality is dying. According to surveys, a 2019 survey found that nearly one in three Americans hadn't invited anyone over in the past year. One in three. Compare that to, like I said, other cultures like the Jewish culture or the Latino culture, the Indian culture. There's a lot of these cultures that come from originally other nations are big on family and big on big, huge dinner parties and picnics and being social. So the church, our church, should be the last place to let this go, this concept of hospitality and getting together and inviting people into your home. We don't need everything. Just remember, we don't need everything to be perfect before hosting. We need open doors and open hearts. So, in conclusion, my first point was that hospitality is not a suggestion, but a biblical expectation. And it's a spiritual blessing to both the host and the guest because of the spiritual bond that takes place through the process. My second point is that shared meals in a home create a deep, sacred connection. And you've all experienced this. Maybe there's someone that you've known in the church for years. You see them at church services, but you have them over to your house for dinner. You get to know them better. They get to know you better. And people can be very different or more relaxed in their own space, in their own home, in their own yard. They're going to open up to you more. So you're going to grow closer that way. And the third point was that excuses are normal, but they miss the point. And my fourth point was that society is losing biblical hospitality, but we can practice it in our church culture. So, hospitality is a major vehicle through which we get to know one another and we draw closer together. So, I'm going to issue a challenge to you. This message would be like considered like a call to action. I want everyone to find someone new to invite over to your house. for dinner or dessert or coffee. It can be an individual. It can be a small group. At least one time between now and the end of the year. You got 4 months. And if possible, moving forward in 2025, have a goal of inviting someone or some small group over once per season. You've got four seasons, summer, fall, winter, spring. And every 3 months, it should be possible to host someone. And the beauty of that is you may invite someone over, you may be invited over. But if we all do this and we practice this, I can guarantee you a year from now, we will be, not that we're not a close congregation, I believe we are, but we'll be even closer 1 year from now than we are today. You know, hospitality is one of the most human and divine things we can do. It turns strangers into friends. I mean, have you ever been at an airport stuck for 6 hours on a layover, met someone and talked with them for 4 hours, or met them on a plane? Some of you are nodding and some of you are saying, no, you know. Some are extroverts, some are introverts. Some of us are just crazy. And I meet people everywhere I go, and I have a tendency to maybe talk too much. But I like to meet people everywhere. It can be fun. You never know who you're going to meet. But hospitality opens hearts, and it reflects the future coming kingdom of God, a place where everyone has an opportunity to eventually have a seat at the table. So let's make room at our table, not only for family and friends and brethren, but on occasion, strangers as well.